Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org. Additional support comes from the Jackson Laboratory, researching the root causes of cancer and other genetic diseases, designated a cancer center by the National Cancer Institute, JAX.org.
Stan Musial last played for the St. Louis Cardinals in 1963. Over the course of his 22-year career, he hit .331, won three Most Valuable Player awards, and became a fixture in the outfield of the National League's All-Star team. But while lots of books have been written and many songs have been composed to celebrate Joe DiMaggio, Ted Williams, Mickey Mantle, and Willie Mays, appreciation for Musial has been more muted. In Stan the Man, subtitled An American Life, New York Times sports writer George Vesey has perhaps corrected that situation. He points out that Musial was not only a terrific ballplayer for over two decades, he has been, quote, a benignly positive presence within the game and beyond it. When I had the opportunity to speak with George Vesey recently, I began our conversation by pointing out that Musial, who made his name as a hitter and an outfielder, began his pro career as a pitcher. I asked the author how that had worked out for Musial.
Well, clearly it worked out well. He was never quite sure why that they had chosen him as a pitcher when he had already shown that he could hit as well. But he was pitching in the minor leagues, being used in the outfield on occasion, and he made a diving catch, ruined his left shoulder, and he realized that if he was going to stay in baseball, he was going to have to concentrate on hitting. And he had an amazing year. In one year, he went from the low minor leagues to playing for the Cardinals in the last 2 weeks of the season as a left field, as an outfielder.
And you suggest that his very peculiar corkscrew-type batting stance was a direct result of his having to make the transition from pitcher to hitter.
Well, there was some of that. He was insecure enough, not having trained as a hitter for several years, never having had minor league instruction or experience, that when he started to count on that as his only way of staying in the game, he was insecure enough to want to make contact. He already was an athlete. He was a trained gymnast from the Polish Sokol Halls of Donora, Pennsylvania, and he had great control of his body, and he was not afraid to go into this crouching stance with the bat way back, his body turned. He was trying to make contact, and the overriding theory that he seemed to have had was he didn't want to be caught and exposed as somebody who couldn't make contact. He just wanted to hit the ball.
Once Musial and the Cardinals organization figured out that he was a hitter rather than a pitcher, he became such a good hitter that one of his former teammates, Ned Garver, said of Musial, he was just a guy with no weaknesses. Did Mr. Garver have that about right?
Well, certainly Garver did. He actually pitched to Musial only once in an All-Star game because they were in different leagues. They were both in St. Louis at the same time. But he observed him enough. When the Browns would have a day off, he would go to the ballpark. And Garver also is one of those rare people who pitched against DiMaggio and Williams and knew Musial very well and is still very much alive, still playing golf in Florida and Ohio to tell the tale.
There is a sense throughout the biography that Stan Musial never got the attention Joe DiMaggio, Mickey Mantle, Willie Mays, or Ted Williams got because those guys all played in either New York or Boston. Was giving Musial his due part of your motivation in writing this book?
You know, I can't say that it was. The reality is he was an epic figure in my life. I am just old enough to remember the 1946 World Series when I turned seven. And I was certainly paying attention to baseball when Musial was the best player in the National League, which was a very insular thing to be. And I've always thought of him as a great player. So I'm a little bit surprised that people in St. Louis are very much aware. And there's indication that he didn't get voted on to, you know, top 25 all-century team, things like that. But people in St. Louis are much more aware of it than I am because, as I kept telling them, we loved him in Brooklyn. He used to moiter us.
And he got his nickname in Brooklyn.
Exactly. So a couple of Cardinal people were listening to the fans speak our unique Brooklynese language, and they said, what are those people saying? And what they determined through a translator was the people were saying, here comes that man, or here comes the man. So by the time the Cardinals got home to St. Louis, he was Stan the Man. So he owes, in fact, he even has a company called Stan the Man, Inc., which deals in collectibles and his signature, and he has it all to thank to Brooklyn.
You suppose at one point that the relative lack of attention notwithstanding, Musial might have been better off in St. Louis because, as you put it, New York might have demanded more from him than Stan Musial would have been comfortable giving. What demands did you have in mind?
Well, I'll give you a perfect example. Derek Jeter, who has merely helped win 5 World Series for the Yankees, is somewhat on the decline, happens to be hurt at the moment. And I can hear the Lynch crowds already lining up, younger fans who can't remember that the guy won 5 World Series. What's he done for them lately? The reporters, yappers on the blog and the webosphere. And they're starting. So I think New York's a tough town, and they expect more from people. Now, Jeter's been able to shrug us off and not give us away too much. But I think that Musial, in a simpler time, and the New York press has always been tough, and so has the Boston press. I think that, that DiMaggio and Williams were both a bit scarred and had a veneer around them that Musial would have had to develop. It might have made him a little bit more grouchy than the civic delight that he was in St. Louis, where people let him be himself without a lot of extra baggage.
All right, geography and fairness aside, rank Stan Musial compared to, say, Williams, DiMaggio, and Mays.
You know, can I say that I think that rankings are overrated. I can find reasons why all of them are great players, and I can extol them at great length. I think Musial was probably a more complete player than Williams. Even though he had a bad arm, he made himself into a terrific left fielder. He was also willing to play first base whenever a manager needed him for a season here and there. So I can certainly compare him to Williams, who could talk about hitting and probably was the greatest pure hitter because he loved hitting so much. On the other hand, DiMaggio was a stylish center fielder. His ratio of home runs to strikeouts is amazing. He made contact with the ball. And Willie Mays was, you know, and you hate to say one of the great pure players because he was also one of the great intelligent players. And he had power. So I could make a case for any of them. If you were starting a ball team, I'm not so sure that you wouldn't start with Mays and go on from there. But, you know, that's my more modern prejudice. All 4 of them are terrific. You could do no wrong by having any one of the 4 of them.
You write of Musial that, quote, he may very well have created a parallel childhood to match other boys' memories of that staple of American childhood, their dad taking them to their first game. Why would Stan Musial have had to do that?
Well, his father was a Polish immigrant, didn't really fit in well, even in a town that was filled, a steel and zinc town of Donora, Pennsylvania. The town was filled with immigrants who lived all over the place. And for whatever reason, Lukasz Musial didn't always get the paycheck up the hill to his house on a Friday afternoon. He was not the most stable personality, and he also didn't fit in very well in America. Other people acclimated within one generation. Lukasz didn't care about this American game, this baseball, and there is no evidence. In fact, several times in his own books, Musial said that the first time he went to Forbes Field, he went with other people. It's clear that his father never took him to a baseball game in Pittsburgh. That was way beyond his ability. And yet one time, telling a story to a friend, Musial talked about being in the stands with his father and getting the notion that he wanted to be a baseball player. It's a very sweet story. It's kind of a rosebud story, and it's hardly a lie. It's just a sweet story that he wished were true. The fact is the father didn't even want him to play baseball, but by the time Musial was in the World Series in 1942 and brought his father into New York to see him play and, in fact, beat the New York Yankees, the father was very proud of him and died 6 years later a very proud father.
Musial was a star with the Cardinals when Jackie Robinson joined the Brooklyn Dodgers in 1947. St. Louis was something of a southern town. Numbers of the Cardinals were angry at the integration of baseball. According to many accounts, some of them said they would strike rather than play against the integrated Dodgers. Where did Stan Musial stand in all of that?
Musial's position was, and you can't find a quote in the papers of the day, but his position was very well known to the club and to his teammates, I'm going to play. And in later years, when he was asked about that, his reason was that growing up in Donora, Pennsylvania, a reasonably integrated town, including blacks did have jobs in the mills and could do certain things. Musial had 2 black teammates on his championship basketball team, And his attitude was, I played with those guys, I'm going to play. Now, there are many anecdotes from players, minority players, African American, Latin American players, that Musial was a kind presence who would welcome them. Joe Black, to his dying day, told a story about being in the old ballpark in St. Louis and having one of the Cardinals say something nasty from the dugout. And the next day, Musial was waiting for Joe Black by the Cardinal dugout, the pathway from the clubhouse to the field. And he said to him, you didn't have to hear that. I'm sorry you did. You're a good player. You're going to be fine. Nowadays, it's easy to say, well, he should have told the Cardinal management, go hire some black players. It wasn't his style. But in fact, his style was to be kind to everybody, which is way ahead a lot of people's styles.
Your book is full of stories about Musial's generosity, his graciousness with fans, of his strong family ties, but you did turn up one story of Stan Musial as curmudgeon. So tell us about how you heard that story from a former 11-year-old Chicago kid.
Well, this story came in over the transom from somebody online who had heard that I was doing a book on Musial and volunteered the story that when he was an 11-year-old urchin and going to Wrigley Field, that Musial had come out of the player's exit one day, and the kid asked Musial for an autograph, as kids do, and Musial said, kid, get out of my way or I'm going to kick you in the shins. Now, this is so unlike Musial that this man, who's a writer, I believe a copy ad writer or something in the Midwest today, he still ponders what it meant that Musial was having a bad day. I've gone back over the box scores. Musial always went, you know, 3-for-5 against the Cubs in Wrigley Field. That year that the man is talking about, Musial hit about 330, his normal 330. So there's no reason in the world why he should have been grouchy. Who knows? But at least, as I point out, it shows that the man was human. He was capable of at least one flare of temper in his life. I mean, he did have a couple others which were more understandable. Some fans, some drunks in a restaurant sassed him, and one of his teammates once made a remark which Musial interpreted to be anti-Semitic, and he told the guy, don't ever ride in the cab with me again. I mean, but those are things that you'd expect from a decent human being like Musial. You don't expect him necessarily to be telling some kid, you know, I'll kick you in the shins. I was really happy to have that anecdote because it was like the one-tenth of 1% that goes against everything else I learned about him.
Yeah, plus he didn't actually kick the kid. That's good.
Well, no. I mean, it's too bad he didn't because the kid, you know, could have had the scars and a lawsuit to boot. No, it was strictly and who knows, maybe, I mean, the guy's a bright guy. I'm sure it happened. I'm sure it happened the way he described it. But anyway, makes us all feel good for the occasional time when one of us might lose it.
George, as you were working on the biography, you were told that you would never have the opportunity to meet Stan Musial, but you did get that opportunity. Tell us a little bit about that occasion.
Right, and twice, as it turned out. Musial, as I point out very discreetly toward the end of the book, has had Alzheimer's for about 5 years. It's clear to any of his fans that he has diminished in recent years, that he just isn't the same bubbly personality. And he had also stopped giving interviews 10, 12, 15 years ago. He just, except, you know, to local reporters that he knew, he just wasn't interested in digging out his soul anymore, even when he could. So I understood that it was a totally unauthorized book, and that's fine. It made it easier for me to be independent. But I was at a restaurant in St. Louis with a very good friend of his named Jim Hackett and a grand old St. Louis newspaper man named John McGuire, whom I miss very much, who passed since then. And all of a sudden, we were told this was Musial's table where he usually sits when he comes to this restaurant. And all of a sudden, Jim Hackett points and says, here he comes now. And Musial was being wheeled in by his grandson, Brian. And he stopped at the table. We were introduced to him. Of course, I made no mention of the book. I wasn't trying to glum in on it that way. But I did get to shake his hand, and I felt his hand, and I thought, how nice this is to be shaking his hand. As it turns out, I also did get to meet him on February 15th when he was given the Presidential Medal at the White House, and somebody scored a guest ticket for me, and I was introduced to him, and I did shake his hand again. One of his very kind relatives introduced me.
George Vesey, sports columnist for The New York Times, is the author of Stan Musial, An American Life, published by Ballantine Books, and he joined me from NPR's New York Bureau. George, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thanks for caring about Stan and his life.
My conversation with George Vesey about his new biography, Stan the Man, An American Life, will be featured in this week's program. In the aftermath of the Stanley Cup Finals, we'll also be examining the phenomenon of the long dry stretches between championships that various teams and cities have endured. We promise not to talk exclusively about Cubs fans. Speaking of which, ESPN's Tim Kirkjian will be joining me to discuss the Major League Baseball landscape. We'll also be updating the U.S. Open and Only a Game's Karen Given will take on the role of Annie, having gotten her gun in the company of an armed line of other women who are also packing heat. So join us, and remember, you can always listen to the program at onlyagame.org.